Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, small business owners, virtual assistants, web developers, honestly, anyone who has a wonderful story to share, and they are excited to freely share their business wisdom as well as their tips and actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome Steve Rohr to the show. Steve is a nationally recognized communication expert, educator, entertainment Hollywood publicist, and author. He's the co-author of Scared Speechless, 9 Ways to Overcome Your Fears and Captivate Your Audience. He has taught public speaking at several colleges, as well as coached entertainment personalities and business executives. He holds a BA in Communication and Political Science, oh boy, that was Freudian, and an MA in Communication. He is also the show publicist for the Academy Awards and has taught public speaking to movie stars, students, and business leaders. And he's going to share 7 public speaking tips so that you can confidently talk yourself into success. Steve, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here. Let me see if I can get him in.
Oh.
Steve, are you
okay
there?
I am. You made me. You made me sound terrific. I wanted to meet this person.
Well, I am excited. I'm really excited to meet you. This is our second time, and I'm so glad you're here. The last time, I think we both had some. I'm not sure what it was. You couldn't dial in, or there was something going on, and I was a little bit scared this morning. But here you are, and I'm very, very excited. Our mutual friend Heather Ann Havenwood, who was a recent guest, says to tell you hello. I wanted to get that out right away.
She's terrific. She's lovely.
Well, she says the same thing about you. So listen, before we get started, tell people what I might have missed in the introduction, because we have a lot to talk about.
Well, you really covered the basics and even more. And, you know, I'm really thrilled to be here. You know, I have had this background in public speaking. I really believe in it. It's a vocation, but it's also a passion for me. And so being on your show to share with people, you know, how they can overcome public speaking is a real joy for me. It's the number one fear in America. You know this, right?
I do, and I have to tell you, I don't understand that. It seems to me like there are a lot of other things that you should be scared spitless about.
Well, exactly, like heights or spiders or, you know, it's a huge phobia. Death is number two, Denise. Death is number two.
See, that I don't understand. Death
well, that's
be
because you're
one.
A great talker.
Oh. I'm not shy.
You have some experience in this. But a lot of people have avoided public speaking like the plague. And so when they went through school, they would take classes or avoid classes to not have to get up in front of other people. And then throughout their careers and their life, they continue to avoid this public speaking thing. But we know that if you can deliver a presentation and do it well, you can rule the world. People who can give public speeches get promoted faster, they get raises. It's an all-win scenario.
And that makes sense. Look, I have a computer science degree, and one of the things that we had to do as part of my degree field, and I have yet to figure this out, was give a speech. And I have to tell you, I was the only girl nerd in the class, and I rocked it because I don't care. I just get up, I say what I want to say, and and leave the podium.
Well, first of all,
guys,
girl nerds are very sexy.
It was horrible.
I just have to say that. But you know what? I'm glad that you're a girl nerd, because that's very big right now. You're the hottest thing going. And number two, in the so-called hard sciences, oftentimes you don't get the opportunity to give speeches. But we know that everyone at some point in their life will be asked or put into a situation where they have to pitch someone, get an angel investor, give a great interview in front of multiple people. You know, so there's so many places that we'll be giving speeches, not just formal speeches, but best man toasts, or even, you know, sometimes at funerals, eulogies, weddings, all over the place.
Now,
so I'm
sure you've looked
in. Here you are.
Well, you know, my attitude was get up, get it done, and, you know, just say what I didn't have anything prepared. I just spoke extemporaneously and then left, and I enjoyed it. But these poor guys, I mean, I felt so sorry for them. And none of them actually, you know, managed to get past standing up there and trembling. How in the world did you get started in something like this? It seems like a field that not too many people are going into. Are you kind of rare in this?
Yeah, I think not too many people are knocking on this door, because it is a huge fear. Not everybody gets up in the morning and says, hey, I really want to address 30 to 40 people today in a conference room, or I need to give a talk in front of a few hundred people or even a few thousand people, and boy, am I excited about that. And it's because we have this idea of public speaking that I think is a little off kilter. You know, I've done this for over 20 years, and I was taught
a
certain way.
Are you sure? I've seen pictures of you. You're a baby.
Thank you. Well, I started very early. I was a shy kid.
Okay.
I was a shy kid. I was one of those kids who sat in their bedroom, you know, drawing and keeping to himself. I'm an introvert in many ways. And when I started school, I stumbled into the theater world and the speech and debate world, and it gave me a voice, literally, figuratively, and taught me confidence and the like. And then I went on to teach it, as you mentioned in the introduction, and have had, you know, a lot of fun doing that. But I think one of the things that we really need to get over is the idea that nerves are a bad thing. Everybody says to me, well, I get so nervous. And immediately I say, great. Great. I'm glad you're nervous. And they look at me like I've lost my freaking mind, right? But the truth is, nerves are terrific. Nerves are natural. We know this because it's that fight or flight idea, the fight or flight
adrenaline.
Or freeze idea.
Right.
Yes. Well, we have this part of our brain. It hasn't developed so much in 300 million years. It's called the primitive brain. And I call it our body's natural defense department. So when our brain encounters something that could be potentially threatening, it goes into that fight, you know, put up your dukes, flight, take off, or freeze, play dead. And so this has kept us alive. It is survival. It's why you don't skip through a dark parking lot at night by yourself. It's why you don't walk down a dark alley. It's why you don't have a picnic in the middle of the freeway, because your brain is saying, that's not good. Now, the problem with this is that the primitive brain cannot tell the difference between walking down that dark alley and giving a speech. For the primitive brain, fear is one size fits all. It reads the same way. So when we're getting up and giving a speech, we think we are walking down a dark alley. We think we're about to get eaten by a tiger, and it's not true. So we have to understand first that it's a natural occurrence. And then second, do what we can as modern humans and thinkers to rationalize it and come back online and say, wait a second, I don't think I'm going to be a tiger's happy meal today. This is just a few people sitting around waiting for me to say a few things. So nerves are good. Please be nervous. And if you don't buy into any of that, you know as well as I do that if you're not passionate about something, why do it at all? And nerves are the signal to you that you care. So I get nervous before every presentation I give. I get a little nervous with interviews. Even this morning I got up and thought, Steve, you got to you know, got to pull it together here. It's a little early here in California, but look, you know, you've got to do it. And I thought that was great. You know, imagine if I came on the show this morning and really just sort of, forgive the pun, phoned it in. And
right,
there was no
right.
passion about what I was doing. My gosh, would that be boring? Would that be boring? So
it would. And I'm so glad you're bringing that up. I'm glad you're bringing that up because I've been doing this since 2009. I do it every Friday. I talk to people from all over the world, all of them fascinating people. And I have to tell you, I get butterflies every single time I start show preparation.
You know what? You care.
Yeah. Well, and I guess so. And I guess I've kind of figured in the back of my little monkey brain that the day that I can just pick it up and, like you say, phone it in, I'm done. I won't be doing this
anymore.
You're
done. You're done. Yes. Yeah. Because yeah. you want to reach out and you want to engage with people. And people who are listening, the person who's sitting there right now listening to you, they're there for a reason. They have valuable other important things to do, but they find that this is a necessary part of their day, and you make it a point to give it your all, and that shows. It's the authenticity. First of all, nerves are good, and guess what? When I get nervous, my mouth goes dry, my hands get really cold. I don't know what happens to you, but I know that sometimes people will tell me their face gets beet red, or their legs start shaking, or they start sweating like crazy. And I ask them, I said, well, does that happen to
me?
Okay, well, there's that.
Seriously,
you know,
my stomach just goes into overdrive.
Of course. And when you are nervous and when the stakes are high, this happens to us. And guess what? Every time I get nervous, my mouth gets dry. And so I have to expect the expected. So if you tell me, look, every time I get super nervous, my stomach starts churning. Well, of course. So don't be surprised by that. And don't be upset by it, because it's happening. It will happen. It's part of the process. It's your body's response to what's going on. And you just have to say, well, Denise, okay, this happens every single time. Let's not be freaked out about it. So you can accommodate as well. So I have a glass of water sitting right here, ready to go, because I know that at some point my mouth is going to go dry. And it's okay. It's absolutely okay. You have to, number one, acknowledge that this is going to happen, and then you accommodate. And guess what? You know these things are happening to you, but your audience probably doesn't. They probably have no awareness that your face has turned bright red. They have no awareness that you are sweating. They just really don't. And so you're really focused in on it. They're not so much. They really aren't. And which brings us to the other good point, is the audience is not your enemy. We think that
I know.
We're going to be judged up there, right? Why do we think we're going to be judged? Well, I can
know.
Tell you
There's
what
some
I think.
Psychology there.
Yeah,
I would
of
love
course.
To hear
well,
it because I don't know.
I don't know about you. I don't do this intentionally, but I judge people all day long. I think
well,
we all
that's
tend
the human
to, you know,
nature.
Yeah,
yeah
it's human
nature.
So we make assessments about people and we think, oh my gosh. And we've watched all these reality shows too. You know, people are holding up signs or buzzing people off the stage, and we think, well, they're going to critique us. And they are, but not in the way we think they're going to. Now, unless you're talking about a political debate, 99% of the time, the audience is not your adversary. The audience is not your adversary. In fact, I will go one step further. They are your champion. They are your cheerleader. There are many studies to show this. But here's an anecdote. Okay. Think about your life. And if you've ever seen a speaker get up and start out pretty well, she's cooking. And then suddenly that deer in the headlight, you know, hits her eyes. And she suddenly goes blank. It's what I call a brain fart. It's a technical term. It's a medical term. But she goes
I've heard that one. I've
brain
used
farty.
It.
Yes, she goes brain farty, okay? And she's up there, and this panic is all over her face, and she's struggling to find her place. How are you feeling at that point as an audience member?
You're feeling terrible for her, and you want to
you
know, give
sure
her
are.
Like, okay, this is where you were. Yeah, I've got your back. I can help you.
Yes, yeah. I'm always on the edge of my seat trying to mouth words, trying to put words into her mouth. You know, any kind of word. Blue, avocado. You know, you just want her to say something to move on because it's so hard for us to see that happen. And I guarantee you that if you look around the room, nobody's going to be jeering at her. They're all in the same boat. They're all on her side. They're hoping, wishing, praying that she will find her space. This is how we know the audience is not your adversary. They want you to succeed. And if you don't buy into that, when is the last time you walked into a presentation or a lecture and you thought to yourself, well, gee, I hope this speaker is really, really boring because I need to give up 2 hours of my life I can never get back. Never. We want to be entertained. We want to be informed. We want to be inspired. And so we go in with that attitude. We go in to be entertained, informed, inspired. The audience wants you to be successful because they don't want to waste their time.
And that makes perfect sense. And, you know, I mean, I guess I knew that I did know this, but I never put it into words like that. And now my brain is thinking, well, yeah.
Well, it doesn't
make
sense.
It's perfectly logical. Yeah.
These are things that are never really taught. They're never really taught. And in our book, Scared Speechless, it's co-written by Dr. Shirley, who is a psychologist. And I always knew the how to put a speech together. She really brings in this idea of the psychology behind why we're so scared. And this book is absolutely unique. There's no book on the market that combines these two elements. None. No book. And it's so important because you can teach a person how to write a speech, I suppose, but without the very basic of knowing that nerves are good and the audience is not your adversary, well, you're at the same place that you were how many times before of trying to get up in front of other people. So you really need to start at the survival foundation of public speaking. And that's where we start.
You know, when I have to be on stage, and it does happen, and I am a complete and total introvert. I mean, I promise you, I'm about 3/4 of an inch away from being a hermit. In fact, I may well be probably in the next year.
I'm right next door. Believe me.
And it is surprising to me how many people like us, like you, like me, like many of my guests who are speakers, they are authors, they are in private total introverts. And that actually makes sense to me, Steve, because introverts I find are very, very deep thinkers. And we need a lot of time to be in our own brain and just kind of, you know, mixing things up in there and coming up with answers. But when they're out and about.
I think that's a great point. Yeah.
Is that how it works for you too?
Yeah.
Because I'm not shy.
It's a great point to make because a lot of people think you're born with a silver tongue in your mouth, and that's just not the case.
Right.
You know, public speaking is the great equalizer. It doesn't matter where you're born, how much money you had growing up, how much money you have now, what color you are, what religion you are. It is the great equalizer. And people are not born as these great speakers. You could be born with a facility for public speaking, but it's really about a skill set. And that's what people need to understand as well. And you don't have to be this bubbly, completely gregarious extrovert at all. So, hey, if you're driving your car right now, if you're taking a jog, whatever you're doing, just know that if you're shy, cool. Look, Denise and Steve, we're both introverts, and we'd be okay with this. And you can too.
Oh, yeah. And you
know
what I find too, exactly, and I'm so glad you said that. What I find too from listening to people like you and my other guests and friends who are introverts or a combination, I am noticing, and this is just strictly my observation, that people like us tend to really, instead of kind of reflecting back to the audience, we are drawing deep. We're almost empathic. We're actually taking in what the audience is giving back, and we're giving it back at the same time. And I'm not even
well,
sure
I hope
that came
so.
Out well. Does that make sense?
No, I think it came out very well. It's about engagement. And
that's the word
we
I was looking
about,
for.
Yeah, but it really is. You know, you make a very good point. it's about connection. So when we have our interactions, it's not just about a performance for us. It is about connecting with people, engaging with them, and having a dialogue. And believe me, it's a two-way street up there. Giving a speech is not a one-sided activity. It's a conversation you're having. And we know this from the feedback that we receive from the audience. We know if they laugh or they clap or they seem to get it or they seem to doze off, whatever it is, you're getting a message from your audience. And it's that dance. So, you know, when people say, well, are you supposed to envision your audience in their underwear? I say, no. A, that's very creepy. And B, it defeats the point of public speaking, which is to engage, and to engage them not as half-naked people, but as people you want to have this conversation with. Or they'll say, you know, I've been told that you have to look above the heads of the audience to the wall in the back. And I think that's nonsense. It's silliness. You know, could you imagine? But people think, well, that's the way to do it so that I can get up there and give a speech. Well, again, eye contact is so valuable. But beyond that, that's not how we work in everyday life. Imagine if you spent, say 10 minutes of your day today just looking above the heads of your family and friends or your coworkers, and you're talking to them, but you're looking above their head. How long do you think that's going to last before they say, dude, what is your deal? Why are you
not
looking at me?
Right. You're not talking to them. You're talking at them.
Yeah. You're talking above them. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So it's really not great advice. Is it hard? Sure it is. Is it possible? Absolutely. You know, public speaking is a skill. It's a skill. You cannot get worse, by the way. It's one of the only things I think in the world where every time you do it, you get 100% better. Even if you feel like you didn't do such a hot job, because it's a skill that you're learning and you cannot unlearn it. It's impossible to become a worse speaker. It's impossible. And so every time you do it, I say you get 100% better.
Oh, yeah. Now, would you consider speaking a soft skill that can become a hard skill? Or is it something that's just kind of inherent and you just hone it?
Well, I think that you can absolutely be a person who comes from zero public speaking experience or even facility become pretty adept. Because there are certain things you should do. One of the things I always say is that English majors tend to make bad speech writers. They do. English majors, really smart. They will write speeches like essays. If you've ever heard
right,
an
but
essay,
you can't speak
read
those.
Out loud,
you
just want to run and hide under your bed. So
right.
I say, write your speech to be said, not read. Write your speech to be said, not read. We have to talk. We have to talk like normal people. So English majors want to avoid jargon. They want to use proper grammar. They want to use full, complete sentences with a lot of commas. Public speakers, not so much. I always say if you have to have a comma in your sentences, you better rewrite that sentence. Because could you imagine if you have to take 3 or 4 breaths during a sentence, during a speech? Not good. You can say one word, one, in a speech. You can't do that in an essay. And
No. So
you have to remember. And a lot of people will write their speech first and then they practice. And let me tell you, most people do not practice at all. You cannot over-practice. Once again, you cannot over-practice. It is absolutely impossible because every time somebody gives a talk, presentation, interview, I guarantee you, on the way home, in the car, wherever, that night, they're thinking, I could have used a little bit more practice. If I just practiced 1 or 2 more times, every single time, even if they were a star up there, they could have done better. They could have done more. And so I always say...
And that's where the passion is, right? The passion to connect
right.
with and engage with
and
your audience.
You have to practice, and you have to write your speech out loud. I don't write my speeches first and then practice because I know I'll probably run out of time. So I write my speeches out loud, which means as I'm going along, I'm trying out new ways of saying things. And if it feels clumsy to me, that's a signal that I need to rewrite that. Or if I come across a word that I don't know how to pronounce, I have to look it up. And I'm guilty of this when I read books. So if I read sci-fi books, for example, and I would skim over the name of a character, and in my mind, I sort of know how to pronounce it, but I can recognize it as that is the character. But if I had to read it out loud, I might have a problem figuring out how to say their name. But when you write a speech out loud, you are forced, absolutely forced, to pronounce words correctly and look them up. You know, the worst thing is when people do not take the time to look up other people's names, right? So you'll hear somebody say, according to Dr. Schlucky, blah, 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 you know, 90% of da, 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 da. Well, that's unacceptable. Imagine if this was you or this was me and you're sitting in that audience. According to Steve something, anyway, he has a book, da, 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 da. It's disrespectful. Not only disrespectful for the audience and the person, but for yourself. For yourself.
Well, you've lost credibility.
For yourself. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, who's
you're
going to believe any part of that particular speech if
That's
you didn't
right.
do your homework,
and there's no excuse.
If you didn't have the respect?
And
yeah.
It's so easy to find these names, too. One of the things I always tell my students, get on YouTube. Chances are very good that these people have done other interviews. So listen to the host, the interviewer say, this is Dr. Frankenheimer. So now you know it's Frankenheimer. That's all you have to do. It takes under 1 minute to figure out how to pronounce this person's name. And if you still can't find it on YouTube, you call their department, the psychology department at UCLA, and you talk to somebody in the office, and you say, look, I'm giving a speech. I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this name correctly. It takes an extra step. But guess what? Denise, you hit it on the head. It is the credibility that you have walking into that room and the respect you have for your audience, the person, and for yourself.
Well, and people get that. You know, if you're standing up there and you're so worried about how, you know, are you doing it right? Are you, you know, hitting the mark? Are you doing? And the people in the audience are going, he didn't care enough to even find out this information.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that from that point on, you've kind of lost part of them, and you're going to have to really work hard at getting them back.
Yes, and you're supposed to be the expert. So if you're asking for money, if you are presenting to angel investors and you're asking for $1 million and you can't be bothered to learn the name of a researcher, how does that look for you? The other thing that you said was very interesting because you have to get these things right. But overall, I don't think perfect speeches are the goal here. I always say, don't be perfect. Please don't be perfect. What you should strive to do instead is to be authentic. Be yourself. People can see canned. They can see robotic. And they smell it. They see it. It's very visceral. They get it. And it doesn't engage the heart or the mind or the spirit. But if you are yourself, even mistakes and all, and you are sincere and you're passionate and they can see it and they can feel it, you are far better off with that audience. One of the ways that I encourage people to connect is use stories. We forget stories. We've told stories for centuries. That's how we recorded our history.
Well,
that's how we knew
exactly
about social mores. It was enormous.
Before we wrote.
And our brains.
We had stories.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And our brains are, in fact, geared to accept a story and then try to find connections in our own life that can relate to the story. This is true. Our brains are receptive to stories, and we tend to remember stories a lot better. You know, I've heard speeches years ago where I maybe don't remember a statistic, but I remember the story about the little girl. Or I remember the story that somebody told about their grandfather and the lessons that he taught. Stories are very, very powerful. And they really help to access the audience, engage them, and create that memory for them.
Vaccine. FBI.
I think I lost you there for a second. So
nope,
can you repeat
I'm
that
here.
Last little bit?
Yeah. So the
I
last
have no
little
idea
bit
what
is,
just happened there.
That's okay. It's, you know what? The anti-public speaking gods are attacking us today. Yeah, well, you know, it's storytelling is very important. And people should not forget to tell a story. Stories at the beginning of a speech are great. Never start out a speech by saying, my speech is about. You know, you need to
or
start
tell
with
a joke.
Or tell
a joke. Those bug me.
Attention getter. Get an attention getter going on. Never just start out in the speech. Get an attention getter going on, which is part of the beginning. Now, speeches, like life, are divided into three parts, a beginning, a middle, and an end. Now, speech people or English majors will say, well, that's an introduction, that's a body, and a conclusion. But it's really just a beginning, a middle, and an end. Most people will really plan out the beginning. They'll sort of hash through the middle, and then they won't plan the ending. They'll say, well, I'll just wing it when I get up there. No. Because this is where you see so many people just sort of wander off the stage. Well, that's all I got. Impact is completely diminished for the audience. Now, audience will tend to remember the beginning and the end. The middle is very important, but really what you're trying to do is make sure that the beginning and the end are both very strong. It's that lasting impression that you're looking for. So make sure you're planning a beginning, a middle, and an end. And people ask me, you know, should I be memorizing this if it's a big speech? Yeah, sure, if you want to. But if you're going to memorize anything, memorize the beginning and the end. The last thing you want to do is be looking down at your notes when you're closing off your speech, when you're ending your speech. You want to make sure you're completely engaged with your audience. You've got great eye contact. The energy is up and out, not down.
That makes sense. I mean, when you – I've been in, I guess, arenas, if you will, or, you know, places where some really great speakers who were not really great speakers. A girlfriend drugged me to a Mary Kay meeting, of all things, and I said, no, I don't do MLM, but if this is what you want me to do, I'll go with you. And I have to tell you, one of the best speakers I have ever heard was a gal, and I guess she was a regional manager, I don't know. She was on fire. She was engaged. She was passionate. She was having a ball. And she darn near talked me into it, but, you know, my wisdom prevailed. I went, no, not for me. But you, I mean, and this was years ago, and I still remember her passion.
Yeah, you remember
yes.
It.
I remember her passion and just, I mean, she really, there wasn't a thing that she said that she didn't believe from the bottom of her toes. And
isn't
it stuck
that great?
With me. It really did, yeah. Yeah,
public
I've never seen her before.
Public speaking can be
since.
A lot of fun. Well, you know what, but it stuck with you, and here we're talking about her. She left this lasting impression for you. Chances are very good. She had a beginning, a middle, and an end. But you said something about the fun of it, which I think is something people don't think about when we're talking about public speaking. But it is about the passion. And so if you can get out of your head about it and really focus on your topic, if you really believe in it, that's where your energy should be. Not about, oh my gosh, they're looking at me, but hey, I really care about this topic. How can I get the audience to care as much about it as I do? And when, you know, we all get in our head, right, Denise, no matter what, this is a constant for all of us. And a lot of us talk to ourselves, you know, and researchers will say, well, talking to yourself is a pretty good thing. Maybe not excessively and not, you know, having multiple conversations on a street corner, but talking to yourself is pretty good. Guess what? We're teaching ourselves things when we say things out loud to ourselves. We teach ourselves things. Unfortunately, not a lot of us are teaching ourselves positive things. So ladies will say to themselves, I'm so fat. I'm so old. I'm so whatever. And they will say these things out loud, and that's what they're teaching themselves. Guys will say, I'm such an idiot. I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
So they're teaching themselves these things. Now, the world is tough enough. Let's face it. There are enough people who are going to tell you you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not tall enough, you're not talented enough, you're not whatever enough. do you really need to be telling yourself that as well? Is that helping you in any way, shape, or form? It's not.
No, and it's a nasty habit that we all have.
It's a
terrible
habit.
I finally decide, yeah. And, you know, the minute, and I know people have done this, the minute you say, oh, I don't feel good, I've got a headache, guess what? You've got a headache. But
that's
I found
right.
out a long time ago, and I had this chat with myself some years ago, and I continue to reiterate it every now and then, but my attitude is, when I'm doing this, I call it negative self-talk, you know, when this ugly chatter
mm-hmm.
to myself,
mm-hmm.
I will stop and say out loud to myself, Denise, if you said that to a stranger, if you spoke to a stranger in a parking lot the way you just spoke to yourself, you would fully expect them to knock you into a gutter. So knock it off.
I love that you said that.
Yep.
You're
absolutely
right.
You cannot speak
right.
to yourself the way you
oh,
would even begin to speak to someone else.
Ever, 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 ever. And, you know, to the students I've taught, the young women, I say, hey, if your mom heard you say some of the things that you say to yourself, how do you think she'd feel? And some of the girls get very teary-eyed. And it's like, you're right.
Yeah.
She would
they're
be very upset.
They're disrespecting their mother.
Themselves.
Because their mother didn't raise them to be that way.
That's right. And the same with the guys. You know, now some of us, you know, some people didn't have great childhoods, but typically the dad doesn't want to hear the guy putting himself down. You know, if I said some disparaging things about myself in front of my dad, that would not go over. I promise you that. It would last about half a second. And then we would get that would be turned around. Now, it's
right.
a very hard habit to break. It's a very hard habit to break. You've done the right thing, and you've talked back to yourself. And I do this all the time. And one of the ways you can do it is very simple. You want to know the secret?
Yes. I mean, you have to catch yourself at
yeah.
it. But exactly.
You stop.
You stop and
you
reassess,
stop.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, but
I do that all the time.
Here's the trick. It sounds kind of monumental because we're in these habits. Here's all you have to do. If you want to stop this negative self-talk, you have to do it just one time on one day. So tomorrow or even today, if you're listening and you want to stop, the first time today that something negative comes out of your mouth, you catch it and you put it back in there and you swallow it. You can either say something positive or just acknowledge it, because the mere awareness of it is going to be dramatic for you. And then the next time, you can decide, am I going to catch this, swallow it, turn it around? What am I going to do with this? Now you have responsibility. You have responsibility. And we know that positive self-talk is enormously powerful. Self-talk itself, as we said, you know, researchers have said that it's great to teach yourself things, but it's great for short-term memory. Here's a little trick that has basically nothing to do with the conversation, but actually works. This is how powerful self-talk is. Next time you lose your keys, don't call yourself an idiot. Don't go into full panic mode. Repeat the words keys, 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 and you are more likely to find your keys faster. This is the truth.
That is true, by the way. I have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going, oh, geez, Denise, really? You
yeah.
didn't hang them on the hook?
Yeah.
I stop.
Yeah.
What I call connected breathing, which is basically
nice.
You take 20, I'm sure you're aware of that, but anytime I'm about to stress myself out for something remarkably silly, I do connected breathing. And then I start just, you know, I put the keys into my head. I'm picturing the keys, and darn
mm-hmm.
if I don't find them in the couch cushions. It's like, oh,
you really
there you
do.
Are. Yeah, you do. You
and
can train your brain.
You can train your brain, and the focus itself is really powerful, and your brain will remember where those keys are. And what you've done is you've taken responsibility for what's coming out of your mouth, and it's actually so powerful and will absolutely help you. And we know this, you know, verbally it's so important, but your body, oh my gosh, I love that you talked about connectivity there, because your body can inform your brain even more than your brain can inform your body. And what am I talking about? There's something called the vagus nerve, which runs from the brain down into those vital organs. And it sends signals. So when the brain is in panic, it will send signals to the body. But the body can also send signals to the brain, both positive and negative. So you can calm yourself down by sending a signal to your body, from your body to your brain, that it's going to be okay. Here's my example. Anytime that I need to go someplace that I'm not feeling it. I love these people, not feeling it today for whatever reason. I slap a huge, crazy grin on my face, like an absurdly freaky smile. And while I'm driving
like
my car,
Jack Nicholson Batman
around,
type of thing?
Yeah, crazy, Joker. Oh. Joker. And so halfway through, I'm either cracking myself up because I'm so ridiculous and people in the cars next to me are like, are you crazy? But, or it has sent this signal to my brain that, guess what? It's cool. We're excited about this. So how does this work with public speaking? Well, you can stand in a power position. You know, Amy Cuddy talks about this.
Amy Cuddy,
the
right,
researcher.
TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you can get up and you can have this power stance, this superhero stance. And it's the body telling the mind that we got this. Now, it sounds silly.
Steve,
you think, really?
You're going
how
to
can
laugh.
This possibly work?
You're going to think I'm a nut, but I do that every Friday before I get on this program.
Okay.
I do, you know, a little bit
that's
of breathing,
it.
And then I do my Amy Cuddy power pose, and then
I
get
love
on
it.
And I start chatting with you guys.
I love it. I love it. I was just on a television show last week, and I was about to go on, and I turned towards the window, and I stood like Superman.
It worked.
So
it genuinely
it absolutely
worked.
Works. It absolutely works. And the other thing about the body is, you know, I always warm up. I don't know if you stretch out, but this morning when I got up, I started stretching out. And athletes stretch out. Why do they stretch out? You know, because they want to be warmed up. And your body's going to go into this physiological change, and it's going to get distracted. And you have to tell the body something monumental is happening here. So I know that my shoulders tend to tighten up when I get nervous or when I do interviews or when I'm speaking. So if I've warmed up my body, my shoulders already know something's happening, right? So they're already loose and ready to go. So even if they tense up a little, it's fine, totally fine. And I ask athletes, would you ever go on the field without stretching out? Would you ever go on the court without stretching out? They said, no, absolutely not. And I say, well, why not? And they tell me, because I'd be injured. Now, you're not going to injure your
right.
tongue, maybe, but again, it's a physical activity. If you don't think it's a physical activity, then why do your palms sweat? Why does your face turn beet red? It's absolutely a physical activity, full body, mind, spirit experience. So I say warm up, warm up, warm up, always, every single time. I did this morning, like I said. You know, it took me a minute, but I started stretching out, and not just the way I speak, and I did vocal warm-ups, but I stretch out my whole body, and it feels pretty good, but I knew that it would help me once I got to this point, and it has.
Right. I stretch before I get out of bed. I'm one of those people who literally hits the floor running. You know, that old, I think it's a birthday card that, you know, my mom sent it to me, which is why it sticks in my head. But, you know, basically the inside of the card says she's the kind of person that when she wakes up in the morning, the devil says, oh, crap. Thanks, Mom. But anyway,
I just saw that on Facebook. I thought it was brilliant. Did you post that recently?
No, it wasn't me, but my mother sent me that card years ago, and it's up on my whiteboard because I'm like, well, you raised me. This is your fault.
Yeah, you know what? Go
but
into
I,
it.
I had
especially
to,
if you're not feeling it.
Exactly. But what I had to do, because I, you know, opened my eyes, my feet hit the floor, I've had to train myself to stay in bed and just stretch, you know, stretch
mm-hmm.
for about five
mm-hmm.
minutes, because I know once I hit the floor, it won't happen. So that's, you know, it's been part of my training sessions with myself.
Yep.
Stretch, say your prayers, whatever you're going to do, say thank you,
mm-hmm.
gratitude, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, whatever
mm-hmm.
your morning rituals are. But you're right, stretching is so important. And who knew?
And it's hard.
I mean, you'd think it would be, you know, something that we know how to do, but we don't.
We don't. It's a discipline. You know, if you've got kids, you know, your time is not necessarily your own in the morning. So you have to figure out how are you going to spend that 5 minutes in bed. Yeah, it's very tempting to sleep, but if you're a dad or you're a mom, you've got a big day ahead of you. if you don't have any kids, but you've got a career, if you're a student, you got a big day ahead of you. And it just warms you up and gets you ready. And it's also, you're being good to yourself. I always say show up for yourself. You know, people show up for everybody else all the time. You know, we're constantly, oh, what can I get for you? What can I do for you? You're always caretaking, which is fantastic. There's nothing wrong with that. But I find a lot of times nurturers don't nurture themselves. And so, they're not as effective then. But it's respecting yourself. Who are you?
Exactly. It's a discipline that, when I tell you I had to discipline myself to do that, now of course it's second nature, but I mean, it was actually a little bit painful for me to stay in bed and go, okay, I've got to do this.
I know. I know.
But once I started doing it, it's like, oh, got it. Thanks, I got it.
And rituals are so important. Rituals are very important. And we know this,
they are.
You know, throughout our lives. And so even when we're talking about public speaking, I always say, have a little routine you do. Actors will do this. They have one or two, three steps that they always do, no matter what, anywhere they are, any project they're working on. They have like little steps they do. It creates this routine, and it tells the body, tells the brain, okay, here's what we're doing now. Let's get ready. But again, it's that taking care of yourself part that I think is so important.
And it's odd that, and I find this among women more than men, but maybe it's just that I'm not observing, you know, men as much, but I find that women are really guilty of not taking care of themselves. You know, they're
big
too busy
time.
Taking care of kids, husbands, pets.
Yep, big
you
time.
Know,
well,
yeah,
women
it's
are
a problem.
To be superwomen. Yeah.
Right.
You have to be everything to all people at all times. You know, and women, God bless them, they are amazing multitaskers. And they can handle a lot, and I've seen it. I've got moms, I've got sisters, and I just look at them and think, I have no idea how you made all of this happen. But it's not magic. It's very stressful. It takes a lot of energy. But then if you don't take care of yourself, how good are you going to be for your kids? You have to be at your optimum level. The other thing that you're doing is you're modeling a way of life for your kids or for people around you. And if you don't want your kids to take care of themselves, then don't take care of yourself, because that's what they're going to see. And I don't think any mom in America wants to see their daughters not take care of themselves, not be strong, not work on themselves in some way to better themselves. I don't think any mom in America would want that, really.
No,
you want
not
your daughters to be
no.
full human being. And so you've got to model that behavior. That's what they see, you know. You can tell them anything you want, but if you're not doing it for yourself and they're not seeing it, guess what? No lesson learned.
But, Steve, you also have to model it for yourself, because we are observing ourselves all the time.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And it's respect. It's absolute respect. And it doesn't mean perfection. It doesn't mean you need to be this robotic person. Just little efforts here and there, little things to take care of yourself, to show up for yourself. And what it also does is it starts to give you a bit of confidence. Brings us back to public speaking. It gives you a sense that, hey, you're worth something. You have value. You have something to say. And I've heard countless people say, well, I have nothing to say. Really? You have nothing to say? Okay. And so who's going to speak for you? Who would you like to speak for you at this point? Who would you like to make decisions for you about your health care or your health or your kids' education or what goes on in the church? Who's going to be speaking for you? Because if you don't have anything to say, somebody else is going to speak for you. So you have to understand, your voice is important. And there are lots of folks who have been raised, or they grew up in a society where, look, they weren't really counted. But not anymore. You know, you're responsible for today. So at some point, you know, women are still being paid crappy. You know, let's be honest. They're not moving through the corporate structure as fast as they should. We don't see enough women in the sciences, in the math. They're not given the same opportunities almost across the board. Well, somebody needs to say something, and they are. But
I think we're starting
don't
to speak
feel
up.
Like they, yeah, and people who are not just famous people, if you see something that you're not comfortable with, you need to say something, but you need to learn how to say it in a way that will be heard, understood, and there's an activity, that something can be done. You know, what I found is a lot of people have opinions these days. Everybody has opinion on anything and everything, but there's nothing to back it up, and there's no solution for it. So you can hate the way something happens, but figure out a way that could maybe help it work better and talk about it. And that's where this passion comes from.
And see, I'm seeing this right now. The internet has become, and look, the internet, as far as I'm concerned, that's mine. It's all mine. I share it with y'all, but God made it for me, just so y'all know. It's mine.
Yeah, well, yeah, you do know that, Denise.
It's where
I know. An angel told me that yesterday. He said, Steve, just retweet everything that Denise tweets.
That's right.
Okay.
Just do what you're told. Nobody gets hurt. But,
that's
you know,
right.
The truth is the internet right now is an incredibly toxic place. Incredibly. And it's just, I mean, I'm having to block so much of it, and I've, you know, turned off cable a long time ago. But I love what you just said, because you can have these conversations as long as there's engagement. You're not just shouting at someone or,
mm-hmm.
you know, calling them a meanie stupid head or whatever it is
mm-hmm.
that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing so much of that, and it is not helpful. So I
yeah,
wish that
because
people
there's
would
no
say,
accountability.
Listen, I don't
yeah.
agree. Exactly. I don't agree with your stance, but, you know, let's have a conversation. Maybe you can, you
That's
know, give
right.
me some more information. And I've had this conversation with a couple of people, and they're saying, oh, my gosh, I mean, you're so open. Well, yeah, because I want to know what makes you so passionate about this particular political argument or this, you know,
yes.
I want to know. I may not ever agree with you, but it
exactly.
gives me an insight into how you're thinking, and, you know, maybe I can go along with it, maybe I can't, but we're not going to part friends over it.
Yeah, you're right. You attack the argument. You don't attack the person.
Exactly. Unfortunately,
you
that's
know,
not what's happening.
It's not what happens. And part of being a successful public speaker is being accountable for what you say. And there's a speaking that nobody really talks about. And it's really saying, look, if I'm going to say something, I'm responsible for my words. If I have misspoken or if I change my mind, I have the right to do that. But you need to apologize and put that out there. But you can't just say, you're an idiot, and leave it at that. That's not, number one, a dialogue. Number two, it's irresponsible, especially if you are someone who aspires to be a great public speaker. Ethics. It's not name-calling and bullying. That has nothing to do with great public speaking. It has nothing to do with it. And unfortunately, you know, the place to look at it is in politics. You know, we see this all the
yeah.
time. There's no attacking of the argument. There's only attacking of the person. And you cannot come back from that. There's no way that you can have a conversation when you attack the person. It's belt lining, you know, going below the belt. It's hitting the person as being whatever. And
right.
it's unfair fighting. And it doesn't help anyone, especially our country. It doesn't help
no, I agree
the conversation
with you.
Move forward, you know.
Right,
and
right.
you know, this has been a very interesting election cycle, but I've seen a lot of that, and I think it also models behavior for people and gives people permission to do it in their own life, which I think is harmful.
You're not going to get an argument from me. I think it's terrible. I do. Listen, I wanted to go
yeah.
back to a little bit earlier in the show when we were talking about engagement and, you know, when you don't want to speak above the audience's head or, you know, around them. One of the – did you happen to see the Netflix special, Tony Robbins, I'm Not Your Guru?
I loved it.
To admit, I was warned by a couple of people who both worked with Tony for almost a decade, each of them. One is my business partner, the other is a client and a friend. And they know Tony quite well, and both of them said, you've got to watch this, but I'm warning you, he drops a lot of F-bombs. And it took me a while. I had to watch it in bits and pieces a couple of times, and eventually I understood that part of it was definitely NLP. You know, he was neuro-linguistic programming for the
mm-hmm.
shock factor to snap them
mm-hmm.
out of it. Then the second part was, this is just how he speaks. It's gratuitous language. That's
mm-hmm.
just who he is. But I'm telling you, you want to talk about connect with an audience? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody, in your opinion, who does it better?
Very few. Very few. Part of the reason I think that he's so great at it is that he connects his own personal narrative. And
there
he is able to say, look, I'm not up here on a pedestal saying, well, you need to do this and you need to go over here. He had a tough life. He had a very tough life. And he is open about it, and he's willing to share that, which I think is a very powerful way of connecting people. It's that self-disclosure that helps people disclose as well. But, yeah, I was shocked with the F word when it first popped up. I wasn't expecting that. And then when it was the NLP, I did too, because I'm not used to hearing that, right? And especially in public address. But then when it was talking about, okay, this is to jolt people out, I thought that's very interesting because, you know, a lot of people, and this is not a judgment, but it seemed to me a lot of people in the room needed a bit of a jolt. That's why they were there. They needed something that's going to take them out of their comfort zone to reassess where they are in life and where they want to go. And so I got that. And for him, it works. Now, I would never do that. It's very tough for me to do that. But
yeah, it's not my style either.
For me, it's just not my style, and it's not the way I communicate or how I my persona is at all. So, but it seems to work for him. He's just terrific. He's just terrific.
Well, and
go ahead.
Once I watched it multiple times, but it brings me back to another one of your points is that, yeah, I mean, he really, let's use the word jolt, he jolted them clean out of their shoes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, he had something to offer them. You know, the one girl who was
absolutely.
So horribly abused, and, you know, he actually went out of his way to not only just kind of curse at them and snap them out of it, he gave them options on how to go forward with their lives and training.
That's right.
And that was
that's
incredibly
right.
powerful. So that speaks to what you're saying.
I think so. And, you know, for those folks out there who've not seen it, no spoiler alerts here, but if you go and look at how this woman looked while she was talking about it, she was very small seeming, sort of mousy.
She broke my heart. Yeah.
Incredible. You know, and again, no spoilers, but she went through something that is unthinkable, absolutely unthinkable. And after she had this breakthrough, you could see the light just so brilliantly. Her entire body changed, her face changed, her smile changed. She was living again. And that's a very powerful thing. And what I was thinking about Tony Robbins is that, my gosh, what a responsibility that is. In the wrong hands, could you imagine? And
yeah,
I know that he's been doing this for years and he has great experience, but this could be traumatic for people. It could put them 100 steps backward. But he is so loving and careful, and it's tough love a lot of times, but he knows how far to go, and he knows how to infuse humor into how he's talking to these people. And for those people who have not seen the documentary, it's really a documentary filming this conference that he's having. So he's talking one-on-one with a lot of folks, and you can hear their stories, and he helps them work through them and, you know, move forward. But again, I was very impressed. He's incredible. And he believes.
He was, and
he does. Yeah.
He does. And I think that's, and I don't know that I would even call him a public speaker at this point, but just for those of you who are listening who have not seen this, this is a three hanky movie. So just be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Have a, you know, wad of paper towels and a big bottle of water because you're going to need to rehydrate.
It's something that I didn't expect. I didn't expect it to be so emotional. And but you're hearing real things, you know. And I think we can become numb to disaster sometimes because they're a bit removed or the number's too big, you know, 50,000 people or, you know, 75,000 people. It seems like a big number. But when you're seeing people raw like that as individuals and hearing their personal stories, it's really a powerful experience.
It really was, and I didn't want to get sidetracked, but while we were talking, so much of what you were saying I kept going back to that documentary. It's like, okay, you know, I'm seeing this because I've actually felt it. So it really did, everything you said made sense. And you know what? we are 10 seconds away from the recording will stop, but I didn't get a chance to ask you how you came into this business and get some of your personal stories. And would you come back? I would love for you to come back.
Oh, my gosh. Denise, of course. I've had a blast.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, good.
Thank you so much.
I mean, there's so much of your personal story that I would love to hear, and I know the audience would. And we just, I mean, you were so busy, you know, giving and sharing all of these wonderful tips that I didn't have an opportunity to say, but Steve, how did you do this? I mean, what was your journey? So definitely,
okay.
We'll get you back.
It's a deal.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for being with us here today. The show will be available for download in about an hour. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Steve Rohr, and I will see you next week. Steve, thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottogovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.